how do you approach it yourself? What role do you see the process as playing in presidential communications and in the functioning of a Republican government?
Well, I mean, the press office plays a very important role in keeping the American people informed about the decisions and the policies we're working to implement here in Washington, D.C. And hopefully, we both have a shared commitment to making sure people are getting an accurate picture of what is going on here in Washington, D.C., and the decisions that we're making. And one of my responsibilities is to make sure that people are getting an accurate picture of the decisions we're making and the agenda we're pursuing.
Because it turned
out there's always going to be some contention there and what an accurate picture is. I mean, obviously, we want to make sure certain points are in those articles or in the news coverage, and it might not necessarily be picked up unless I continue to make those points over and over.
So what are some of the ways in which you see that that you all have a different viewpoint about what kind of facts to get out?
Well, I think it's more of, obviously the media is always looking for a particular lead for their story, or looking for a particular angle to their story. And, from my standpoint, I want to make sure that our message is getting out. We have certain things that we want to communicate and get out in the public realm. And also to make sure that they have a complete picture of what is happening. Sometimes the media will tend to focus on certain aspects of a story. And, certainly in Washington, D.C. here, there is a lot of, and for good reasons, there's a lot of focus on the process, whereas we like to make sure that there's a lot of focus on the substance as well, of what we're trying to do.
To that end, you will talk about policy in briefings, but there are not a lot of occasions where people come here to talk about policy. You have had some recently, but often policy is discussed out of the departments. And so for White House reporters, it's difficult to get them to write about education policy unless that education policy is explained here. So do you have trouble getting them to focus on the things, the policies you want them to focus on?
Well, I think that sometimes depends. It depends on the current cycle we're in. There's a lot of focus on Iraq. There's going to be continued focus over the next few days on this prisoner abuse issue going on in Iraq, and we understand that that's the nature of things. There are certain times when we are better able to get, better able to focus the media's attention on some of what we are trying to do in other policy areas. But certainly, we understand the media's interest in the whole Iraq story. It's a high priority for this administration too.
And it's an obviously it's an international story as well. How do you deal with stories that, what kind of compare stories that are national and ones that are international as far as how you would treat them and how you're involved in dealing with them?
Just in the different differences.
Right, so you talked about the...
Obviously as the spokesman for the president and the president himself. Anytime we're speaking, it's going to be covered internationally. You're not just speaking to an American audience, you're speaking to an international audience. And I think you try to keep that in mind when you're at the podium or when you're wherever it may be.
Do you, in fact, when you're thinking of an international audience, do you choose your words carefully in terms of even how they're going to be translated? Like, say, when the president was doing his interview yesterday.
Well, were
you all thinking of how they would get translated into Arabic?
Well, one of the things we were doing was we got the okay to go ahead and put the transcripts out immediately too. Sometimes the meeting can be misconstrued and mistranslated, but we have the benefit of having our stenographers transcribe what the president does, and we put those out as well, so that the American press had exactly what he said.
What about the Arab press? Was it translated? The State Department translated, so there was an Arabic version.
They typically do, but I just don't know in this instance. I just haven't had a chance to follow up on that. But certainly, when it comes to foreign policy issues, you always want to be think and be deliberate about the way you communicate things, but certainly when it comes to the foreign policy, the words do matter even more so.
McCurry talked about that, about how the resonance of language and how
his words are interpreted differently, or the phrases that you say. So,
so have you run into trouble on that at all?
Not that I know of.
So are you, well, for example, do you write out stuff and it, you know, and say it when there's a an important issue and you want to make sure that the words are put down in a particular order?
No, I do. A lot of times you don't get a chance to really look at it when you're up at the podium, but you do try to think through how you want to frame particular issues and specific points that you want to make sure you make while you're at the podium and when you're answering those questions, to make sure that that helps get across an accurate picture for the American people.
And when you start a briefing and you say you begin talking about what the president has done and, during the day and the conversations that he had, and maybe a statement, do you find that the rhythms of the briefing are different if you do that than if you just come out and say, okay, you know, questions?
Yes, not always, but you know, I would always prefer to start with something at the beginning of the briefing instead of just walking out there and saying, I don't have anything. Whatever questions you have, let's start with questions. Some days, I don't think it necessarily matters. I mean, there's certain days when the president maybe had extended questions from the media earlier in the day, and a lot of the focus is going to be on that. And you know, the briefing, I don't think there's necessarily a need to add anything up front sometimes.
Is it a tone setter? If you come out and give a statement, that sort of thing,
it establishes
a rhythm to it.
It can be.
One of the, if you look over the years, have been a lot of people have served as press secretary because it's a bone crunching kind of job that you have a lot of different kinds of pressure on your, and your day is very long. Can you tell us, just tell us this morning, when did you get up?
And 5 o'clock. As always.
And what's your routine?
My routine is I start at home and I read the Washington Post and New York Times from home after I get up at 5 o'clock and getting ready. Also, turn on BBC World Report and start listening to that. It's a good summary of kind of things across the world. And then at 6 o'clock, I guess, start listening to NPR as well as still reading the papers and come and try to leave home. In the North Arlington, try to leave home about 6:45 and get into the office about 7 o'clock. And I'll look through some of the other papers here, maybe look over the back. Actually, I should probably start the night before, because the night before I make a habit of looking at the network, watching the top of the networks to see what their stories are, ABC, NBC, CBS. And obviously, I've got 4 stations up here and keep track of the cable stations as well. And then when I come in the morning, I'll take that first period of time. I have some security briefings that I receive every morning to kind of take a look at that. And depending on the day, I mean, it's not unusual for me to walk over to the Oval and try to catch the president. He gets in usually a little bit before 7 o'clock, gets over to the Oval Office, and maybe bounce a couple of things off him, issues that I know, questions that are going to come up that I'm going to get asked and that I maybe want to get his thoughts on. I've worked for him for now for over 5 years. So I have a pretty good sense of his thinking and the way he approaches issues, but that's often helpful to me to go over there and get his thoughts. I meet with my deputies at 7:15 in the morning. Every morning, I have 3 deputies, 2 that are down in the lower press area, and then 1 that has a dual reporting job. He's the chief spokesman for the National Security Council. He reports to Condi Rice and he reports to me. And 2 of the 3 deputies have been here just about from the beginning, and the 3rd one I brought on when I moved into this position. And they also, they look at some of the other national papers, so we make sure everything's covered in the news.
You divide them up?
Yes. Sean, our National Security Council spokesman, obviously is looking at all the foreign policy issues in the paper. And then Claire and Trim will split up the other papers like USA Today, Washington Times, Wall Street Journal, LA Times. Like I said, when I come in, I have them on my assistant's desk up front, and I'll try to glance at them and look at specific issues within those papers as well. And then I meet with them. We kind of go over what I see as the news of the day, and I kind of get their thoughts on other things that they think might come up onto our plate, and we'll talk about some of the questions that we can anticipate I'll get later in the day. And then I go to senior staff at 7:30, and this is all the assistants to the president, chief of staff, deputy chiefs of staff, national security advisor, general counsel, policy, the policy team.
How many people usually have?
I think it's about 19 or 20. I may be off a few. The other chairman of our Council of Economic Advisors, and they're our Homeland Security Advisor, legislative liaison. So it's all the people that are assistants to the president. And at that meeting, I always give a report in that meeting. And I try to keep it focused on, assuming that people have kind of seen what's in the news, keep it focused on the big issues that are going to come up that day for the White House. Here are the issues I see that are going to come up. Here are some of the questions I think are going to come up, some of the big questions, the bigger picture questions. And I might use that opportunity to ask people for some input, or at least get people thinking about those questions, whether it's National Security Advisor or the Deputy National Security Advisor he attends as well, Steve Hadley, or the General Counsel or the Chief of Staff. I'll just raise some issues and get them thinking about some of those things. I may follow up with them on later, or they may be able to give some feedback right there.
Is that done at the top of the meeting?
Yes, right after the schedule goes over the present schedule, it goes straight to me, and then the legislative team and others around the table.
Do you have some samples that you can say what questions you think they're going to come up, some ideas of how you might respond to them?
Some examples?
Yeah, I mean, you say, well, I was thinking of responding.
Oh, yes, no, I'll say, this is what I intend to say. I mean, for example, the other day, I'm just top of my head, we've had a long list of books that have come out about the president. They always generate questions in the briefing room, and typically I say I'm not going to do book reviews from the podium. Joe Wilson came out with a book late last week, and when I went in senior staff, I said, look, this is what I intend to say. On the lines that, Joe Wilson has made it clear that he has a political agenda to see the president defeated, and I don't intend to do a book review of someone who has a political agenda. And, I said, that's what I intend to say. No one had any questions or concerns about it. I just wanted to let people know that that's what I was going to say about it. And, it also gives the senior staff a heads up, and it gives them a chance to jump in and say, well, you might want to add this, or you might want to, our OMB director's in there. We had some coverage today. From our announcement yesterday that the president was going to ask Congress to create a reserve fund for our troops in Iraq to make sure that between the time the fiscal year 05 budget or the fiscal year 04 year comes to an end and the time we pass a supplemental, which we said we're going to, for Iraq and Afghanistan military operations, that there's no disruption in the funding or resources for our troops. And so that's an issue that I'll obviously discuss with our OMB director.
And you discuss in the senior staff meeting?
Yes. And now there are times also after senior staff, maybe there's one or two people that I'll follow up with right after senior staff, and we'll sit and talk further. There's certain things you'll need to keep the senior staff there for that you discuss individually one-on-one. From my standpoint, I always try to look at what are the, and this goes back to the 7:15 meeting, what are the one or two big issues of the day? We know that the last 2 days it's been the issues of prison abuse in Iraq. And so the one or two, maybe three big issues of the day, I will pay particular attention to, and I'll track people down, I'll talk to the president, or I'll find people that I know will have the answers. It's important to have a Rolodex isn't the right term, but my BlackBerry, I guess, is the right term, or the White House directory handy, know who the right people are to go to, whether it's the director for a particular region of the our national security team, or the policy person on a particular, maybe education or something, to call that person up and kind of get their input as well. But I spend my time focusing on that, and they're probably more, I think, I'd say that they're anywhere from probably about, 10 issues a day. Maybe they'll come up in a briefing somewhere, typically, except for the last 2 days.
I guess you looked at the
And What's
so
that?
You looked at the Washington Post this morning.
Yes, and it's four stories on prison abuse on the front page.
Picture, you know what your
yes,
day
and it was going to be a replay of yesterday, essentially. But anyway, in that 7:15 meeting with my deputies, we'll go over some other issues as well. I said, well, why don't you go find out more information about such and such, and they'll pull together some guidance for me or some points and some background information that will help me be able to respond to those questions as well. But I know that those issues are not going to be the dominant or driving issue of the day, that I may get one or two questions about it, and then I'm prepared to respond.
Can they get information pretty easily at 7:15 in the morning? In the sense of the kinds of people...
You mean before the gaggle?
Around the government, that yes. People are at their desks.
Well, people tend to respond quickly when it's the White House, which is helpful.
Uh-huh.
Having been a deputy before I was in this position, I mean, you call people up and say, I need this by 9 o'clock or 9:15, so that there's enough time before the gaggle, which is the first time I see the entire press corps, to get prepared and make sure that you have thought it through in your head some of the points that you want to emphasize.
Uh-huh. How long does the senior staff meeting last?
Anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. It depends. It's not as short as 5, I think, but typically it's in the 15 to 30 minute range.
What piece of that would you have?
I think there are two of us that always have something to say. I'm one of them, and our legislative liaison is typically the other one that always has something to say, although I guess when the Congress is out, sometimes you don't have a lot to say. I think every day I have something. It depends. I mean, it depends on how many. I try not to bring up issues that I can deal with outside of the senior staff or that the senior staff that you don't really need to bring to their attention necessarily, the whole group. I try to focus on the big picture issues in there and some of the big the questions that I know we're going to get that everybody should be aware of, or at least key people should be aware of.
What comes next?
After that, I come back to my office and have a little bit of time and keep in mind that in the morning, I mean, sometimes reporters will be popping up here or they'll be calling just to kind of see what's going on. Maybe the wires are a good example of that. It depends on the day. My next meeting is 8:15, so between that time period, I mean, I'm, you know, just kind of looking more at the president's schedule for the day and some of the briefing papers for that day, maybe, or starting to get my thoughts together a little bit on some of the issues of the day, maybe calling people. Like I said, that's later in the day, but at 8:15, I meet with regional spokespeople, the media affairs team, and their spokespeople for different regions of the U.S. They're one of, I guess, four, five parts of our communications team, and representatives from some of the other offices, like the vice president spokesman. Mrs. Bush's press office usually sends someone, and some of my broader staff, and I usually just give them a quick read out of the senior staff, and we go around the table to see what other issues they have. That means it's 5 to 10 minutes. It's a pretty quick meeting. Then Dan Bartlett, our communications director, has a meeting at 8:30, and that's essentially all the communicators within the White House attend that. One of the communications people from each office, like the Council on Environmental Quality, Office of Management and Budget, the USA Freedom Corps office. I mean, the different communicators will be there. And typically I'll start off that meeting and kind of go over the big issues of the day and the types of questions that are coming up. And I'll say, this is what I intend to say on these issues. Usually I have a better sense of what I'm going to be saying by that point. Then we get input from everybody else in terms of what's going on in their areas, which is actually a very helpful time for me to know about. You know, maybe I didn't know that such and such was going to announce some policy initiative that day, or you know, whatever it may be. And it, you know, like, well, I should probably say something about that. Yeah.
Would you find out about department secretaries, what they're doing?
Our deputies in my office, we have it split up with all the cabinet departments that they cover. And, I mean, if something big is on their plate, they may have been in contact with people from those departments already. But typically they talk to them a little bit later in the day after the gaggle.
Okay.
But if there's a need to, then, I mean, our deputies will be calling those cabinet department, their counterparts over there, and talking to them earlier in the morning. I think today I read where the Justice Department, in one of the articles, the Justice Department was, the paper described it as investigating CIA officers and contract workers in Iraq that were involved in the prison system. So I didn't know about that, so then one of my deputies tracked that down with the Justice Department to find out what exactly was going on. Uh-huh. And I think all they said that, you know, what they were using was that they were examining some things over there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they had gone as far as saying there's an investigation. I think there's certain things they can and can't say about it. Uh-huh. So
in that, how long does that meeting last? With
15 minutes.
Would you also talk about what kinds of events are taking place?
Yes.
And so what you're going to focus on in terms of not just what the press is going to ask, but what you want to talk about.
Yes, and I mean, it's more so probably about the types of things on the press's mind and the issues that are going to be out that day. I talked about Cuba and the Middle East. I mean, I knew that with the president rolling out some new steps on Cuba that we were taking today, and meeting with King Abdullah of Jordan, that those were going to be big issues as well. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of, I guess, is all mixed together sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Then what happens after the DAN meeting?
After that, I come back here and I start focusing on getting ready for the gaggle. That's when I really spend my, I like to try to have probably at least 45 minutes before the gaggle just to spend some time getting my thoughts together, calling people. I touch base on a daily basis with our campaign and my counterparts over there just to see what's going on their side of things, because I will get questions here on politics as well and on the campaign, although I tend to not get as far into it as the campaign does. Mm-hmm. So I'll touch base with them, let them know what's on our plate for the day, what we're doing, get a sense of what they're doing that day.
For media affairs, do you get a sense of how things are playing out in the various states and
regions?
In fact,
oftentimes, maybe after we had the bus trip, I might follow up with the person from that region and say, how was the coverage? Uh-huh. Or the president had two media roundtables with some regional papers on the bus trip. And so that would be an opportunity to ask our media affairs team how those stories played out. Uh-huh. And it turned out great. I mean, we got two stories. We got the interviews with the president and then the stories about the president going to that particular town for a campaign event.
Do you find that when you go into a town that you particularly get great television coverage? For example, I know when you went into Ohio, not this time, but another time, a political scientist that I know was saying that he came onto a television network to discuss, you know, what the president was saying, and he said that they followed you all from the time that you landed. Through everything.
Yeah, and that's not unusual. I mean, they'll show Air Force One landing in a town, and when the president comes to town, it's big news.
That's right. So
and
you had great coverage.
You're always going to get lots of coverage.
Hours.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's not unusual for some of those local stations to take the whole event live. Uh-huh. And even the lead up to the event, visiting with people that are coming to the event, the president typically meets with what we call our Freedom Corps greeter to highlight people that are involved in volunteer service activities under the wing of Air Force One when he lands. And so that person typically will get coverage in local papers as well. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that person in his speeches.
Uh-huh. And so you know how the event has been covered after it's...
Not always, but typically. Uh-huh. I typically get a sense.
So you have a sense.
And media affairs will send around coverage from the papers and things like that at a later time.
You get a sense of what works and what doesn't.
Yes.
So in the gaggle, before the gaggle, you get your staff together, and would they typically have talked to people outside of the building?
Yes. In and out, it depends on the issue. I mean, it depends on if they can get more information from that particular agency or department, or they can get it internally. Maybe it's both. I mean, it's always good. From our standpoint, to kind of double check things and make sure you're getting all the you're getting accurate information as well. Not that someone's intentionally telling you wrong, but it doesn't hurt to check with more than one source.
Yeah, that does.
Just like a reporter, I mean, you kind of play a reporter internally.
Yeah, that is historically been a problem of trying to get people to give you accurate information.
And you learn who who the best people are to go to as well. People that are going to tell you everything you need to know versus people that will just tell you some, you know, they maybe don't tell you everything you should know. Not that they're trying to do anything intentionally there, but you kind of learn.
If somebody, say, you know, bleeds out some salient fact and then that causes a problem for you, do you then have somebody go back, you or somebody else go back and say, look, in the future that we need to know more than this?
Yeah, no, I mean, if you know, something I didn't know about and I got a question on or the reporter knew about and I didn't know about, no, I'll go back to that person typically. Uh-huh. And say, look, it would have been helpful to have this. I can't go out there. Hopefully that doesn't happen too often. I mean, that's one of the things in this position. You don't want to get blindsided. You want to try to anticipate as much as you can the types of questions you're going to get.
Were you surprised about the pictures?
Last week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it was just really throughout the building.
Well, yeah, and you heard from the president and saw some of the coverage today about some of the breakdown in the process there to keep us informed.
In a way, is that...
As far as I know, everyone here learned about it after it aired on 60 Minutes, too.
Yeah. That sometimes it's difficult to get departments to tell you what things are happening.
Well, that's why, I mean, we try to... I mean, I didn't go through finishing my day, but one of the things I do later in the morning at 11:30 every day, and if it's not me, if for some reason like today, I had to be with the president in his meeting that was happening with his Cuba commission. So Sean McCormick, he's always on the call, my deputy for the National Security Council spokesman. We might just turn that volume down all the way. We have a ghost over there, and those things go on and off all the time. It's annoying. But usually it's like at 8 in the morning when you're really trying to wake up and all your thoughts are just lost in one
It's probably all that equipment.
But
every
day... I'll have a conference call at 11:30 with counterparts at the Pentagon, State Department. So Richard Boucher at State, or his deputy Adam Morelli, Larry DeRita at the Pentagon, or Brian Whitman. CIA is usually on the call. Our UN, U.S. mission is usually on the call. From time to time, the CPA will have someone on the call, like Dan Senor. And that's a good chance for all the foreign policy team to kind of touch base and say, for me to go over kind of key foreign policy issues. Like, we know we're going to get asked about the Middle East, our final status negotiations. We're going to continue to emphasize the same thing. Or we saw a story saying that we were backing away from our plan. And so I talked with Richard Boucher, someone saying, we're going to be saying, no, that story is not accurate. We're still exactly where the president said we were. Make sure we're all on the same page. I'm not saying the same thing.
What purposes does the gaggle have for you?
Well, a couple of things. One, it lets me lay out the president's day and talk about some of the issues we're trying to push that day. It gives the press a sense of what the president's doing that day. It also kind of gives me a sense. It gives me a sense of where the press is going that day. Now that can change if there's breaking news in between the gaggle and the briefing. In this environment that we're in the last day or so, I had a pretty good sense after gaggles on both days that where the press was going to be. Mm-hmm. We're at prison abuse issue.
And then you might have a congressional component that you didn't have at that time, like members of Congress may come out.
That's true. There are things that will happen in between there. Yeah. Nowadays, John Kerry will go out and do something or have an event. Uh-huh. So that can change the dynamics.
The gaggle...
And I always have to keep in mind, too, the president's schedule for that day, because that can affect my schedule for the day. It can move the gaggle around and everything else, because like Friday, somewhat of a crazy day, right after gaggle, had a policy briefing in the Oval Office on I think it's climate change on Friday. Then immediately after that, we had a meeting with Prime Minister Martin of Canada, followed by a press availability in the Rose Garden, and I'm at all these things. And then lunch in the residence, and I was attending that as well, so the briefing got pushed back to a much later time. I didn't have a lot of time to really prepare or think through everything that I was going to be saying at the briefing, but it's important that I'm there with the president, because I'm going to be asking questions about those meetings as well.
In the past, the gaggle has not been transcribed. It just, you know, here,
right.
We had the same in the earlier administrations. Right. It was here, and people put their recorders down. And the same sort of rules.
And I still kind of debate in my head whether or not I should bring it back into this room. I mean, it had some benefits of being less formal versus being more of an off-camera briefing, and I'm still kind of debating that in my head. Uh-huh. And the one, there's a lot of, on one hand, I really want to do that and bring it back up here. I kind of like that format, but it's so big now. I mean, it used to be primarily just for the wire services. That's why the gavel really kind of started. They needed some news for the wires early on. I mean, now it's expanded to, well, you got cable stations, and then everybody else wants to come to it because it's just a sense right now, an off-camera briefing.
Yeah.
Except it's much shorter.
Typically, during a curry or locker, I'd say probably there were 30 to 40 people here. And everybody stood except for Helen and Mark Nolan.
Right.
Sat in chairs here and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
The tradition.
But there was no transcript.
And correspondence.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you use the transcript for? What purpose does it serve?
It's sent out internally, so I guess everybody else has it. I mean, it's just for record purposes, I guess.
You don't use it?
Sometimes I'll look back at it. Maybe look back at a specific question I got just to make sure I know what the specific question was that I may get follow-up on a follow-up question about in the briefing.
Because one person, for example, that I talked to a couple of years ago was saying it was useful to her because she found what things were going to be discussed, you know, what you all were discussing and not discussing, and so she knew what things to talk about and not talk about. So it was good guidance.
What person?
It was somebody within the building.
Oh, okay.
And who got it on email, and so she read it, you know, each day, an email, and she found it helpful. It was directional for her. So do people talk about that aspect of it? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that we don't.
Because it becomes important.
I mean, after gaggle's over, I'll kind of have a debrief with my deputies afterwards. I mean, they sit in on the gaggle. Sometimes they'll jump in if I need them to. They're in the gaggle. Some specific, you know, technical detail or something they may know about. But yeah, we'll kind of just debrief about, well, yeah, so we should follow up on this. Or
do you give assignments after the gaggle?
If needed.
To people,
yeah,
to,
if needed.
To find information?
If needed, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, there may be something in there. I mean, one thing in this position you don't do is talk about something you don't know about. Take the question, say that we'll get back to you later. I'll come back to it in the briefing.
And do you, like, if you say to a reporter in the briefing that you're going to get back to them, do you get back to them individually?
I try to.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we'll just put it, occasionally we'll put it on the end of the briefing, or we'll post the question later in the day. Don't think we've done that recently, but I don't know if there's no need to necessarily.
What's the rest of your day?
But sometimes in the briefing I'll say, let me take that question, and then we'll just put the question and the answer on it and send it out so everybody has it. If it's one that's more narrowly focused and it's just that one particular reporter wanted it, then I just call that reporter back.
After the gaggle, what do you do?
Well, like I said, I mean, there could be the policy meeting briefings in the Oval with the President or the Roosevelt Room or other events that are going on. This morning, like I said, we went into the Oval for a pre-brief before the meeting with the Cuba Commission, and we had the meeting with the Cuba Commission. He made some brief remarks to the pool in there. Wasn't going to take questions there because he was taking questions later in the day with King Abdullah. But, you know, sometimes I'll use it to follow up on things or get additional information. Because I guess between the gaggle and the briefing, I mean, a lot of your thinking is on the briefing, getting ready for that. And so even though you might have other things going on, you still got that in the front of your mind.
What is the effect, do you think, of it's being televised? What difference does it make to you?
There's always been a lot of discussion about whether or not it's good to have the whole briefing live, or whether it was better the old format, where maybe the first part of it was and the rest of it wasn't. And maybe there are ways for the press secretary to go on background and provide some helpful information that maybe you want to do on camera. Because when you're on camera, I mean, you're also recognizing that the networks and cables are looking for specific sound bites for their stories, and so you're keeping that in the top of your head. You want to make sure that certain that they have certain points in their story So you're going to continue to emphasize certain things and maybe not go as far in some things as you would, because that's not what you're going to want them to be playing on the newsletter that day.
The briefings have sometimes been contentious, and that's true in the gaggle as well.
I can think of a few.
How does that affect you?
Personally?
Yeah.
I grew up in politics, and I've known a lot of these reporters going back to the campaign, and I do have great respect for what they're doing, and they have a job to do. I also have a job to do, they're trying to get a certain story. They're trying to break news. I'm trying to make sure a certain message is getting out there in the public realm. But like I said, hopefully we're all working toward the same goal of getting the American people an accurate picture of things. I don't look at it, take any of it personally, if that's the question. I recognize they're trying to do their job, and sometimes they're going to be tough, and they're going to press me on certain things. And that's just part of that reporter trying to get the information they need for their story. Mm-hmm. And if you take things personally, you shouldn't be in this business. Mm-hmm. It requires a lot of patience. And you also recognize that when the lights are on, sometimes it's a little bit different way the reporter behaves than in the gaggle. They recognize the cameras are on as well.
Yeah, one of the things that just happened when the seats were first established is that the networks were put on the front row. The three networks were put on the front row. So in a way, that has an impact because they are right there, and so you end up with a picture of
that's true.
Of them, you.
That's true. And when you're there in the briefing room too, you remember that just because of the way things are playing out, that briefing room doesn't mean that's the way it's being seen by the American people. That room is small, and it can become kind of contentious in there at times. But it's important to kind of keep your composure up there and be patient and not let them rattle you, I guess. Sometimes part of what they're trying to do is get under your skin.
One of the things that real strengths that you bring to your position, besides being able to look at this in an institutional way, is and not taking it all personally, is that you have a good sense of the president, and you're a good reflection of the president, particularly the president's temperature on something, not just what issues the president's dealing with, but sometimes when you're very strong and sharp on something, it seems to be that you're reflecting the president.
Yeah, and I mean, he has a certain tone that he likes to get across to, and certainly there's some clear principles that guide his decision making, and that's helpful. I mean, the understanding his thinking, and having been around him for so long, I do have a good sense of the way he thinks and the way he approaches issues and the way he would answer certain questions. Mm-hmm. And the tone that he would want to get across.
Do you ever talk about tone when you're talking
with
him?
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, that's another thing. I mean, during the day, I mean, if I need to, before the briefing, I mean, there may be things that I need to follow up with the president on. I'll just walk up to the Oval and catch him and talk to him and get some additional guidance from him in terms of what I check something and say, this is what I intend to say, and he may say, great, that's fine. Or he may have some additional comments he wants to have.
Mm-hmm. Where is
that? But yeah, no, no, we talk about that with the president, and the president's very aware of it as well. I mean, he's typically someone who, he's an optimistic person and someone that likes to get across a positive tone. I mean, that's always the way he's been going back to his days as governor, to kind of rise above all the partisan process stuff and talk about the bigger picture issues. I think he has a good understanding of it's important for the president to set a particular tone.
Does he know how things have played, like when you talk about an issue and how you're going to present it? Does he know how it's played? Does he watch the network news clips that get run?
Well, it's,
does he read the newspaper?
Yeah, he actually, this is actually an interesting issue because he got asked about it. Yeah, he will look at the major papers and glance through some of the stories. There's some that will see the headline and maybe he won't bother to pay too close attention to it. But he also gets briefings from his staff, whether it's on specific issues. I'll certainly talk to him about some of the big press issues. His chief of staff will talk to him about some of the issues. His national security advisor will talk to him about some of the foreign policy issues. And, you know, we talk about the types of questions he's going to get before he goes out and faces the media.
When you discuss those kinds of things, like what's going to come up, say, when he takes a couple of questions in the Rose Garden, how many people are there to discuss
it? Depends. I mean, if we're on the road, I mean, it may just be me.
Yeah.
If we're here, sometimes it may just be me, and maybe the chief of staff's around, maybe the national security advisor's around, maybe Dan Bartlett's around. It depends on the circumstances. I mean, today, Dan and I were both there. I mean, it was pretty easy to anticipate what he was going to get today. Knowing that he was going to get something about Secretary Rumsfeld and whether he should resign, and follow-up questions about the whole press interviews issue and questions about the Middle East. Certainly not from our press, from the Jordanian press, in the whole peace process.
Would you give him some sample kinds of things, suggestions? Or?
Mm-hmm. I may say some of the points I hit on, or say that yeah, I mean, he has a pretty good sense of what he wants to say typically when I tell him the types of questions he's going to get. But I may say you might want to make sure you touch on this point or touch on that point, just to remind him about that.
Mm-hmm. How's your afternoon after your briefing?
Depends. You know, I just came back right before this, just came back. It can be flexible some days. I mean, when we're in town, I mean, we travel quite a bit these days. And we had the bus trip Monday and Tuesday. We got a bus trip tomorrow. We've probably been traveling on average 2 or 3 days a week. And when we travel, I mean, I'll brief the pool on Air Force One typically. And there's no formal press briefing unless there's a need to. We have things set up on the road if there's a need to. For in Crawford, I typically brief from the filing center at the middle school in Crawford. But when we're here, I mean, I like to have a little bit of flexibility. Depends on the president's schedule. I just came back from an interview he had with an Egyptian newspaper, which was set aside for a half hour. And so today's kind of been pretty busy. It's been a busy last couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah.
Both between travel and just everything else. And I guess last week with not traveling, I mean, it was a four briefing week. So we only traveled one day last week. It is not in one commission hearing or meeting. And so I knew that was going to be a busier week for me here at the White House.
Do you talk to individual reporters? Do they come in the afternoon?
And yeah, I mean, they'll come in the morning. They'll come in the afternoon. I mean, they'll walk up here. It's not unusual for the networks, maybe mid-afternoon, 3 to 4, maybe a little bit later time period, or the cables before they go and do their 5 or 6 o'clock shots, to come up here and ask a couple of questions or check a couple of things for their stories to make sure that they have it right.
How many reporters would you talk to on an individual basis on an average day?
I mean, the ones that are here, you also get some calls from others outside that aren't typically just sitting around the White House all day. I mean, you've got the wires here at the White House, and they're here all day long, the networks, the cables. So you tend to stay in touch with those reporters, the ones that are here. And then the major papers, certainly, you stay in pretty close contact with. Washington Post. I was just talking to one of the Washington Post White House correspondents, just following up on some of the issues from earlier in the day. USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and those are the ones just a few minutes ago before you all came up here I was visiting with.
Would you ever initiate a call yourself,
mm-hmm.
that you'd read a story and you didn't like the story for some reason or another?
Mm-hmm. I try to go directly to the reporter and address it that way. Ask for corrections if need be, or at least let them know that, look, I think you went too far in the story, or you went too far when you said, wrote this or said this on your network.
Uh-huh.
I think the reporters will tell you that correctly. One other father problem with the story, the emphasis in the story, that I don't think your reader is getting an accurate picture of what happened.
Is that sometimes a reflection of the president? The president reads the story and doesn't like it, and
can be. Can be.
What happens at the end of the day? You've taken a lot of reporters' questions.
Yeah, I mean, maybe have other meetings with the president, maybe meetings with world leaders that you sit in on as well. Toward the end of the day, I'll try to wrap up with my press office staff, both the staff assistants and the deputies, and kind of go over whatever issues we may have. I mean, there are the things you talk about, some of the earlier meetings, like the coverage of different presidential events. This is going to be a pool spray. We're going to do two questions each, two questions for the president, and two questions from the American press, two questions from the Jordanian press, then we'll cut it off after that. So you talk about all those coverage issues as well. You may be looking ahead to tomorrow at the end of the day with your staff. The deputies are taking calls on different issues, maybe issues that didn't come to your attention, so you're trying to check to see what other stories are going to be out there. What other things do I need to be aware of? What's going to be in tomorrow's paper? Typically, the chief of staff has a wrap-up at the end of the day with a very small group, and myself, the communications director, Carl Rove, deputy chief of staff, Harry Myers, policy. That's pretty much the group. Sometimes others will be there, but we kind of talk about some of the bigger picture issues that are out there, not necessarily just press, but certainly some of the press issues.
One of the things that
stories are out there, so everybody knows what's going on.
Uh-huh. One of the things that you've done occasionally is to go back and by the AP booth.
Actually, I haven't done that recently. I need to. Yeah. I think it's because of the travel schedule more than anything.
Uh-huh. And
not because of the way they're treating me at the briefings.
How did you come up with that idea?
Actually, Marlon Fitzwater. One of the things I did before I started in this position. Obviously, I learned a lot from Ari and Assad. Saw a lot following him, serving as deputy, and got a sense of what I was getting into. I don't know why I did it, but after all that. No, I went and talked to some of my predecessors, sat down at length with people like Mike McCurry, Marlon Fitzwater, George Stephanopoulos. I visited with for a little while. I visited with people like Dee Dee Myers since that time, and some others. But Marlon, actually, I think, was the one who gave me that idea and said, sometimes I found it helpful just, kind of on some days just to go back to the back later in the afternoon and just and be available and visit with reporters. I mean, there's sometimes when I go back there because I want them to know certain things, or make sure that they have information about certain topics. There are other times you can just walk back there and just visit with them. And after a while, sometimes usually everybody will start seeing all the press secretaries back here and maybe huddle around and you wrap it up.
Yeah. So do you find that takes some of the edge if there's been a briefing that's an edge?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to do. I think it's helpful for them. And they know that you're very accessible and they don't always come running up here. So it's sometimes good to go back there. I need to do that. I haven't done that recently. I've done that last month or so.
Perfect.
Yeah, no, and I also try to walk downstairs even after I do that. So thank you for reminding me.
Sure. Well, do you all have questions?
Yes.
I have a question. First of all, thanks for dedicating this time. You mentioned some of the possible benefits of being close to the president, maybe even reflecting some of his attitudes. Mike McCurry seemed to have a bit of a different approach and just seemed in general to be less close to the president. So I was wondering, do you think there are any maybe drawbacks of being so close? Are there, does it make your job maybe harder working for somebody that you're so close to?
No, I think it's very beneficial for me to have known him for as long as I have and to be close to him. Yeah, I mean, it helps me understand his thinking. It helps me be in a better position to know what he would say if he were ask certain questions, or, and I get them in the briefing. Maybe it's not one that I anticipated, but I know how he would respond. There's no need to necessarily talk to him about it. And I might let him know later in the day. But I think it's probably important for a press secretary to know the president well, and to certainly have an open door policy, to be able to walk in there whenever you need to get answers to questions. And he's very much that way. I mean, he's kind of that way with a number of his assistants. I mean, if you have assistants to the president, they know they can just walk in there if they need to. I mean, we don't try to bother him with things that he doesn't need to be bothered with.
How many times a day would you typically go in there?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, there are also times like maybe before a particular meeting when I'm going to go in there if he's getting briefed by maybe his policy team on what's going to happen in the meeting on the Cuba Commission, for instance, or and so you can catch him there and talk to him sometimes about things off to the side, or after meetings maybe walk back into the Oval with him, just visit with him there. And it just depends. I mean, it depends on the need. I try to do it when I need to see him, not necessarily just because I want to. And then, you know, but then there are other times where maybe, you know, you haven't seen him much that day, and you just pop over there and just to, kind of let him know what's going on from my standpoint. And you know, he'll ask questions about what's on the press's mind, where's their focus, and we'll talk about that. You know, after this meeting with the Egyptian newspaper, he walked outside to the South Lawn, and we were going to visit someone on the way back. I try to be accommodating to their needs, but there are certain ways we do things as well, and you know, sometimes that's difficult to find a good intersection there, I guess. But that's part of my role, is to help them get the information they need and help them get the access they need. There's always going to be, they're always going to be, and Martha can give you a history lesson on this, but questions about access from the press corps, and you're always trying to keep that in mind. I mean, I try to, that's another part of my role. I mean, there'll be reporters, they'll come up here and we'll talk about, they may have some, certain concerns or certain issues that they want to raise, and as much as I can, I try to be helpful on those issues.
Let's take one short one. Will?
Oh, I'm sorry. She was going to...
No, I'm just joining in.
We can go a few more minutes. I'll be late for my wrap-ups.
Yeah. So you talk with the campaign press secretary.
I think we go maybe 10 more minutes, if y'all are fine with that.
Yeah,
great. So you talk with the campaign press secretary. Mm-hmm. How involved are you in that whole process? I mean, George Bush is running. He's president, but he's also running, you know, for re-election.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be...
Well, you got a campaign team. Like I said, I mean, I've got counterparts over there, and they're going to deal with a lot of the political side of things. But I mean, because I'm the press secretary and the president's chief spokesman, I mean, I know that I'm going to get questions on these issues as well. It's just part of coordinating, not unlike what we do with cabinet departments and others.
Do they follow your lead?
I guess it kind of depends. I mean, there are certain things that they're doing on those days, or certain things we're doing. And, you know, it's helpful to be able to coordinate in terms of what we're seeing out there. Make sure that I know what they're saying in response to things, and they know what I'm talking about as well. And there are certain times when I say, well, I'm just going to leave that to you all. I'm not going to get into that. There are other times when I might say, well, I might wait on that, this or that issue. A specific example off the top of my head. It kind of depends on the day. Martha can probably tell you there's some days when it can be much more focused on the political side. I mean, this environment we're in right now, it's much more focused on Iraq. I mean, it's always, of course, from the White House press corps looked at from the context, from the a standpoint of the political campaign and what it means for the election. I mean, that's something that they're always going to focus on for the next several months. And you keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
First, I was wondering how many Diet Cokes you drink a day.
At least two. This may be three today, but I'm not a coffee drinker, so I actually drink Diet Coke in the morning.
It's kind of strange, I feel like I know you from the briefings, but when you're up there, you are so good at saying on message. How did you learn to do that?
I guess that's a compliment. So
well, either way, it's true, so you know, how in the world did you do that?
Well, and I think that's part of the discipline of this White House, is that we do try to coordinate and make sure that certain points are being made and that we are on the same page. I've started working for the president in the governor's office back in before that, but early 1999, as deputy communications director, Karen Husick contacted me. I've been involved in Texas politics and contacted me, and so. I think you kind of develop those skills dealing with the media because you all can appreciate this. I mean, you don't get to pick what they put in the paper, but they don't get to pick what comes out of your mouth either. And so you kind of, it's something you kind of develop. You know that they're looking for certain things, but there are certain points you want to make sure to get in certain stories. Skill you develop when you're involved in communications.
Do you love the act tricky sometimes?
There's some basic things you try to keep in mind. I mean, like I said, one I've always don't talk about what you don't know about. Don't try to fake it or act like you know what you're talking about. There's going to be times when I don't know exactly what questions they're going to ask. They can ask whatever they want. There are going to be some questions. You may just refer them to the State Department or Pentagon, or you may say, let me get back to that question. The president is someone who likes to talk about what he's for, not what he's against. I mean, that goes to the whole issue of tone. We like to talk about what we're for, and it's more positive as opposed to talking about what we're against. They might ask you, well, what's your feeling on this piece of legislation? I don't know what the issue may be. It may be education, healthcare, or something. Well, the president's got a proposal to do this. And so we like to talk about what we're for as opposed to what we're against and not talk about it in the negative. Things like that. And this president likes to make announcements on his time frame. The press corps likes to break news on their time frame ahead of everybody else. Everybody gets out to get the story ahead of us. But it's part of the discipline and focus of this White House that we like to announce things on our own time frame, and when the president's ready to announce it. Now the press corps is going to go out there and be talking to different agencies and departments and getting views that may reflect more of what that person may want the president to decide, but it may not be what the president decides or what the president is actually thinking. So sometimes that can lead to a picture that's not accurate what is actually happening. I think there was some stories. I'll give you an example off the top of my head. In Cuba, that's probably played more down in Miami area, but. There were certain people that were saying the president was going to propose cutting remittances by a certain percent, and that decision had not been made. Obviously, someone wanted that to be part of the decision. That was not what the president decided. When you see us saying, the president hasn't made a decision on that, that's an issue that we're reviewing and he's looking at. I think that reflects some of that discipline. And I think again, that's some of the contention that's going to be there, the tension that's going to be there between the media and the White House, because they want to break the story ahead of time, but we want to announce it on our time frame, and maybe the president hasn't made the decision. So if I'm getting and talking about it before the president's made a decision, I may not be giving people out there an accurate picture of what's happening.
How do you decide when you're going to give an exclusive? To somebody? What's the whole process for doing that?
Dan Bartlett's communications director is very involved in that. I'm involved in it. We talk it through with the president. I'm trying to think of a recent example. I mean, the Arab networks, yesterday, two Arab networks we decided to do. We thought there was certainly a need to do it in light of these pictures, these images that we're getting out there in the Arab world. It was important for the president to go and speak directly to the Arab world. And so we talked about that and reached out to those networks to give them a one-on-one interview with the president.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes on a policy, like say maybe on something that that deals with international relations, you know, David Sanger might be the person who comes.
Yeah, it might not be the president. Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, I'm thinking just president. Now you're talking about more of either background in a reporter, as senior administration officials, for instance. It depends. I mean, David Sanger certainly has a lot of interest in North Korea and has a lot of knowledge about the situation in North Korea. Maybe if we're getting ready to announce something there, we might say this will be a good way to kind of get out there and frame the story and make sure that people are getting an accurate picture of what's happening. One thing you learn in this position is that the national media tends to move in somewhat of the same direction. And there tends to be the New York Times and the Washington Post, national papers like that, Wall Street Journal, others will, USA Today can tend to drive news in a certain direction depending on the stories that they break. And so that's why you give a lot of attention going to those papers.
And see, but do you find that they do different things? So, for example, USA Today would be more likely to drive, say, the networks on stories that related to high-tech things or healthcare, baby boomer issues, that they tend to focus on them perhaps a little more than the others would, and the networks pick up from there.
Could be. I mean, New York Times and Washington Post tend to drive a lot of things. Trying to think of another example, like sometimes we're going to announce a new policy initiative, maybe tomorrow, and we, as part of our efforts, try to make sure it's framed in an accurate way that people are getting the full picture. We may go to the wires and say, look, we don't want this to appear in papers tomorrow, but you can put it in your overnight meeting. They put it on the wire at 2 or 3 in the morning. All the morning papers are already put to bed. But then they have the story out there before the president announces it, and it helps kind of frame things before it starts leaking out on someone else's terms, and maybe it's not being framed or not getting across the message you want to get across.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.